else, does everyone here know the Sufi invocation? I think I'm really wanting to know, because I'd like to do it line by line if you don't. So I could say a line and then we say it together. Is it good to do that?
Yeah.
Okay. Because the prayer is very beautiful and it's deeply meaningful. Our wonderful hostess, Safraz, mentioned that this morning. And every line of these prayers is just, if you just take one line, you know, Pir Shabda, who's the head of the Rouhaniyat, is a good friend of mine, and we talk a lot. Of course, I design a lot of things for him, too. But that's his main, one of his main practices is just on the breath toward the one step. And he told me that he does that when he goes to sleep at night. That's the practice on his breath. How beautiful is that? I mean, I do it also because then I think I'm tuning into Shabda wherever he is. You know, so think about it. Just that line, and that's the first line of this prayer. So we'll say the prayer with our palms up. And if you can know, not just visualize, but know and experience this stream of blessings pouring into your cupped hands. And the first line, I'll say the line and then we'll say it together. And I do like to say it the way it's on Murshid's Darga. At his head, there's the prayer, the invocation, and it goes towards, with an S, towards the one.
Towards the one.
The perfection of love, harmony, and beauty.
The perfection of love, harmony, and beauty.
The only being.
The only being.
United with all the illuminated souls.
United with all the illuminated souls.
Who form the embodiment of the Master. Here I want to pause, because it was a masculine pronoun or noun that was used. But you could replace that, if your attunement is such, to the mystery, you know, the great mystery of all the masters, saints, and prophets, who form the embodiment of the Master. The spirit of guidance.
The spirit of guidance.
Now take this blessing in the palms of your hands and pour it through and over your being. It's the gesture that your Sufi teacher gave you when they initiated you. You can reinitiate yourself and recommit every day by making this gesture. Now I want people to be comfortable. We have some nice carpet up here. I know for me it's, now I've grown old enough that it's hard to sit on the floor, but you know, if you want to come here, it's fine. So the teaching today is on, the way Murshid phrased this was the deeper side of life. The deeper side of life, just that, is very important. So we're going to dive deep. So the way I do my classes, most people know, but some of you are new, I read a little bit and then we can have question and answer, and we do practice, and then we read a little bit. But I always like to go back to Murshid's words, because there's something very beautiful and potent in them. So Murshid says about this, the title of the class is Who Are You? H-Who, H-U. And, you know, I remember Pir Moinuddin was always very gracious to me and invited me in whenever I was with anywhere, you know. He said, come and sit with the circle, the, you know, the sheikhs and the murshids. And I remember he described Who as, God is here right now, and God is in you. Who? So the question is, who are we? Who are you? Murshid goes to say, the knowledge that the mystic seeks after is self-knowledge. The knowledge that the mystic seeks is self-knowledge, the knowledge of one's self, within and without. Now, here I want to pause, because Murshid said, the outer life is always the reflection of the inner state. The outer life is a reflection of our inner state. And this morning when I was reviewing this teaching, many of you know I've had the opportunity to study with some of the great teachers of Tibetan Buddhism, but it was Dalai Lama quoting, I think, I tried to find it, either Shantideva or Nagarjuna, and the quote is this: if you want to know about your past lives, look at your present condition. If you want to know about your future lives, watch your present actions. Very wise words. And it's here. The only knowledge that's worth attaining within and without is self-knowledge. So that self-reflection, how critical that is to our well-being and even salvation, you might say. It's the contrary to the general tendency. I feel so bad that you're standing there. I would like to make you comfortable. Are you okay? Bring a chair forward, you know. There's some carpet here. I know some people don't like to sit on the floor. Yeah, and if there's anyone that's comfortable sitting on the floor, you could offer a chair. Thank you, honey.
Two chairs just opened up.
So this is a good time just to breathe toward the one, toward the one. Okay, there's a chair here for someone.
Two chairs.
Two chairs.
Quite a few chairs are stacked up back there too. Are you allowed to use those?
Absolutely. Anything and everything. So for the sake of the recording, I'm just going to begin again, okay? And I am recording because I share these with people around the world, these teachings. The knowledge of the mystic seeks after self-knowledge, the knowledge of oneself within and without, the only knowledge that is worth attaining. It is contrary to the general tendency, which is to always want to know what is before one. And that is why one sees more faults in another and less in oneself.
No.
You know, Merchant understood that.
No.
Right? And he was witness to it many times as well. I think, you know, imagine him giving this discourse to his students. He's teaching us something, and then he was teaching them something. He saw something that they needed to learn. A person may think that if anyone is wrong, it is the other, because they are less conscious of their own mistakes. But you know, it's often the way it goes in. I had an experience of that just before lunch, and I took the opportunity to work with them, with the individual right before this class. I thought, let's clear it out. I've been missing you, Nurse Lima. I'm so glad you're here. So, it's good to clear that up too, because it can be the person actually meant completely reverse of how it went in. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And we know how that can be. It's like, for God's sake, I didn't mean that. I meant it actually that way. It's like, great. Otherwise, if we don't take that opportunity or we don't, Geminis, we talked about it, and then I said, I'm gonna do the air breath. Because that's the element that purifies the mind. And as soon as I walked out the cabin, a person appeared and we could have that conversation. You use those breaths. They're great medicine. They're great alchemy. We're going to do them today. So if I quit talking, and I'll So self-consciousness is something quite different than self-knowledge. Self-consciousness, one is never conscious of the real self. Only being conscious of the reflection received from others. That is the thought of self-consciousness. If it is not that, then one pities oneself. Oh, poor me. Why does this always happen to me? Oh, everybody thinks this about me, right? We've all been there, haven't we?
Yes.
Amen.
Yes.
brother.
Not me.
Not you. No, of course not you. You just push through with that jabbar, don't you? Yes. So, you know, I'm poor, I'm wretched, I'm so miserable. Now, here's also an interesting thing. If you have people like that in your life and that's their constant script, they're probably quite enjoying that script. So let them have it. Because you know what it does? It's like a, it's sucking you in to get, and it's like, if you don't entertain it, then maybe we'll stop it. You see what I'm saying? So you have to be very mindful of what's going on here, because some people like living in that reality. Let them have it. They're happy that way. Some people are happy being miserable. It's just the way it is.
Well, also there's that reinforcement.
Yeah.
And I know I had a frozen shoulder all last winter, and it got to the point where I went to the dance meeting and everybody would ask me about it. Mm. And I realized about 2 times in that this wasn't helping me at all. This was
no.
making things much worse. So if I stand up at the dance meeting, I'm like, I'm okay. Don't ask me anymore. This is not helpful. You
know? No, that's exactly right. And there, we've talked about that in these classes before. You know, people come up if you've had a loss or, you know, you've had an injury, and it's like, and sometimes it's with that wiggly little voice. Are you okay? Like, you know, and that's pity. And Murshid says that is the worst thing, is to give that kind of pity. And it's not supportive. You know, I'd much rather someone say, oh, it might hurt now, but I believe you're going to get better. You know, or it's all in God's plan. It's all God's will, right? Maybe you needed to rest that shoulder. Maybe you were shouldering a little too much or something. Mm-hmm. Yep, the body speaks. Yes, dear.
I was going to say, like, what Marty was talking about this morning with some of our NAFs that come up, you know, at camp. And, you know, a lot of them are from how people grew up.
Yeah.
And there's someone that carries this with them. And, but she's at the point of realization of, oh, I was acting from this place.
Beautiful.
Inshallah.
Yeah.
That's part of the healing.
It is. You know, we have to, if we can somehow travel back to that place. Because I often ask people when they come to me with something like that, can you remember the first time you felt that way? It's very helpful. And you look, and that's the point actually that we need to return to work on that place and bring it forward. I've said it before, these words may mean nothing to you. I have cards with me, you can call me and write, but the Kasab breath is very good for that, the alternate nostril breathing, because it can send you to the past, you can re-script to the present, and you can go to the future with that breath used a certain way. So it's very helpful, and that's an alternate nostril breath. So there's this practice that I want to use. It's one that my first initiator and teacher here, second next to Murshid Sam, Murshida Vera, she loved to use this. She worked a lot with light, and I think Yasmin this afternoon will be talking about some of those practices that Murshida taught us. But also she loved kudus. She used it a lot. She coupled it with many other wazifas in tandem. Kudus very simply means it's the ever purifying one. So we may say, well, I'm already pure. I don't need any purification. Well, in a sense, we really are, but we're kind of trying to polish the, you know, like get through to where we really realize that, you know? I mean, there is nothing to be added and there's nothing to be taken away, but to see clearly is the point. I saw something, I love that story that Murshid tells about the little cub that's among the sheep. Do you know that story?
No.
Okay, there's this little cub, a little lion cub, that's running amongst the sheep. And this big lion comes up and says, "Rah! Why are you running with the sheep? You're not a sheep." He said, "No, I am a sheep. I'm paraphrasing. It's a really beautiful story. You can find it in the message volumes. And the Valhalla says, no, you're like me. I'm not like you. I'm like a sheep. I'm a sheep. And then the lion said, no, you must come with me. I will show you who you are. Well, you know, this is allegorical for how the teacher and the student, right? Mm-hmm. You follow in, I shall follow in your footsteps, which will lead me to the eternal goal, says one of the prayers. So you may gossip or immerse it. Yeah, that's right. So we do in the manner of. So the lion cub wouldn't dare. He thought he was going to get his little head bit off. So he goes with the lion, and the lion goes to this pool of water. And he said, now lean over and drink from the water and look at my reflection and look at yours. Mm-hmm. And then the little lion cub realized he was the lion too. There was somebody posted something on Facebook like that. You know, it's like a little lion cub looking in a mirror, and then the lion was like, I am. I mean, it was obviously someone that knew the story. It was beautiful. So, but that's what we are. I mean, we are that. We're everything and we're magnificent. Not in the sense of the ego, but in the sense of just by the virtue that we're here. We traveled on that ray from the divine, and we are all returning to that ray of the divine. And that is the thing that we can, if we can stay connected to, then we can come from that place. But we're not always there. And the purification breaths help with that. Mercy to Diet would say, oh, you know, the purification breaths are very helpful and they must be done every day. And someone said, well, why Mercy, why should they be done every day? And he said, well, you know, let's put it this way. Someone has told you there is this marvelous restaurant. And you go to that marvelous restaurant and you think, what the hell were they talking about? That food was the worst food I've ever had. But what you didn't know, and you didn't give it a second chance because you made a judgment, right? But what you didn't know is the master cook wasn't there. The chef wasn't there that day. It was someone else. And they weren't doing very well in the kitchen. But he says that's how we are in everyday life. We constantly make judgments. We constantly put these layers over things or between us and others. And what we need to do is lift them and constantly purify. You know, we all want to drink pure water, have clean food. I mean, it's part of that. It's an inner culture of purity. So the word that's used for that is kadus. Kadus. It's a hard Q sound. U-D-D-U-S, if you want to know the spelling. And it's the ever-purifying one, is the short meaning. So as you do it, just sort of think about that purification. We'll do it in a minute, but I want to explain a little bit more. It's this experience of intimate union with God, with that pure essence of who we really are. And it's masked by many, many things, of which we maybe have to unlearn some of them. It transcends that lower self or the base self, and it rises you to experience the source of all. It has this constant cleansing of the conceptual mind. So the mind is very fanciful. It likes to be entertained, and if it's not being entertained, it will entertain itself. So this helps to purify. You know, better to go to a wazifa than to whatever's going on up there. It purifies the experiential world, and it draws us towards true intimacy and union. And I think, you know, nature is very interesting because we are created in a sense that we're kind of always looking for that right person to mirror something back to us. And sometimes that results in coupling, and sometimes it results in children, and so then you see the meaning of some of that. But the truth is that, oh my God, you know, we really are born alone, and we die alone. There's no one else that, I mean, you know, our mother births us, but there's something that we come out of that unity into this world. And we spend the first few years, God willing, sort of individuating and establishing ourselves, but then we spend the rest of our lives wanting to merge. And we think it's falling in love and, you know, whatever. It is some there. I don't mean to say that, Joe. That's not for you. I love you, honey.
Well, that trip to Niagara Falls ruined you.
He spoils me, doesn't he? We have so much fun. We're leaving here a week from today. We'll be in Taos.
Oh,
We're going there. Yeah, we're enjoying traveling. So, but again, you know, those of people that are closest to me know that I say this. There's not one person in the world that's going to do it all for you. This morning I was joking in the cabin, you got to have your house husband, your work husband, your coffee shop husband, your, you know. But you know, what that means is it's a burden to one person to expect that from just one person. You know, having the beautiful garden of many people that inform your being is far better. And then you have something interesting to talk about when you go home. So this word kadus is, it means to return to your home. Return to your home, or return to your village, right? So it's returning to your home, returning to your root, it could be. And that root is that divine source that's hidden in our soul. The divine light hidden in our soul that we may know and understand life better. From the prayer. So, we'll do this just 33 times. The first time aloud, kind of intoning kadus, and we'll precede it with Yah. So it'll sound like this. Yah kadus. And then we'll go just to a whisper where we'll breathe in. Kadus. And then we'll just go silently on the breath 11 times. So it becomes more and more subtle, more and more inward. So let us begin the ever purifying one. Yakudu. Yakudu. Those of you that have been at the Darga of a night con above it, like where his head would be, there's a dove turned downward looking at where his head lies, rests. And Murshida Viro used to describe Kadus, you remember Yasmin, as the Holy Spirit. And so you can think about that message, the lines of the prayer, message as a dove from above when Dharma decays. Speaking the word that is in thy mouth as the light filleth the crescent moon. Beautiful line from the prayer. So think about the descent and the emergence of this Holy Spirit, this ever purifying one. Feel that as we complete this outward expression of Kadus. Yakadus. just silently, breathing in and out, Kadus. Susan, next to you, I think, is my cup. It's a purple cup. If that could be passed forward, I'd be so grateful. I'm very thirsty. Just you go. Thank you, honey. Safira. Hold both. Drink with the beloved. Whatever that is that might be troubling you, I mean, dharma,
can
you know, the dharma, you want to repeat it, Hassan?
I'll do the best I can. As a devil from above, when dharma decays. Can you hear me now?
Yeah,
as a message, as a dove, so Hassan's asking, I'm going to paraphrase, you correct me if I'm wrong, is, and can everyone hear me? You should always just do this if you can't. But it's, you know, that line of the prayer, you know, as a dove from above, when dharma decays and the light fills the crescent moon. So, you know, dharma is duty, but dharma doesn't necessarily mean it's holy duty. Sometimes it can be unwholesome. So, and dharma is everything. I mean, if you talk to a Buddhist, this table's dharma. I mean, think about all the manufacturing and people that had to labor to bring this table to us. I mean, it is all dharma, you know. So, when dharma decays, so is the dharma decaying? Sometimes it is. They say we're in the Kali Yuga. This is the time of darkness, right? We've entered that phase. And yeah, I mean, if you turn on the news, it's, you know, we're in the earth is in peril. It's burning. Wildflower fires in Los Angeles, they're burning the rainforest in Brazil. You know, we're set afire. It's like apocalyptic in a way, isn't it? But, you know, at the same time, we're here. We're as Safraz, Sheikha Safraz told us again, we're like creating points of light, fields of light. We can't give up hope. The Dharma does decay. I mean, that's why...
That's real.
It's real. I mean, as soon as something is created, it starts to decay. That's the way it is. And that's Dharma, too. But, you know, there are so many beautiful stories, especially in India and Tibet, about when there was a disintegration of the teachings, there was always a being that came and would revive it. So think of yourself as that being, and in your own way, you're reviving the Dharma. It doesn't have to be in big ways. We're not all sitting up here, and I'm not sure I'm doing all that much good. But, you know, I can point out certain things. But the most important thing is, you know, like my husband says, if I leave you alone for 30 seconds, you've already made you friends, you know? Like anyone that saw me go down that zip line in Niagara Falls. He said, yeah, she zoomed right ahead of me, and she already made 3 Facebook friends before I even arrived, you know? It's kind of like that. But that manner of friendliness is being a Sufi. You know, it's a love, but it's not really an attachment love. It's just like an acceptance love. People need to be loved and accepted, you know? That's how we, in a way, can also restore the Dharma, you know, just in our everyday life. Did that help, Hassan?
Yes.
Okay. So the next, so the one Saoirse talks about the knowledge of the body, and that's, of course, this densest form. And I've talked about it before. The nature of disease is that it may manifest in another plane. The most grossest form of manifestation is the body. Marshita Vera taught me that and said sometimes you have to work on diseases in another level, another plane, and deal with it at that level and then bring it down. So that's something to remember. I'm giving tidbits, but they'll keep coming, breadcrumbs. So Marshita says, self-knowledge can be divided into four kinds. So the first one, which we're going to talk about a little bit further today, is the knowledge of the body. But then he also talks about the knowledge of the breathing system. He talks about the knowledge of the thinking faculty, and then self-knowledge, the knowledge of the self. Now he says, knowledge of the body, of which is the first knowledge, is of this physical vehicle, which we call our body. Knowledge of the body. This vehicle, again meaning the body, has again two aspects, the head and the body. The former for knowledge, although I think Marshita would also be the first one to say, I mean, I think he's speaking to a particular group of people that may think like this, knowledge comes in all kinds of ways. Those of us that are educators, we know that. Some people learn audibly, some people learn visually, some people learn kinetically. So we're gathering knowledge all the time. The breath is a great conveyor of knowledge. We take that in. So he says, again, two aspects, the head and the body, the former for knowledge. And then he says the latter is the special organs of perception that are situated throughout the body. So what are those? What do we call them often now?
Chakras.
Chakras, yeah. So they're these centers where we feel things. You know, most common is, oh, you feel it in your gut, or you feel it in your heart, right? But there are other more subtle ones. You know, there are even secondary and tertiary chakras that we feel. There are here as well. It'd be interesting to look at that shoulder. So those subtle areas are, you know, these fields of energy that, and meridians and all of those things, you know, it moves through the body. We know that. A lot of you work with energy and understand that. So then he says the first is, again, for acquiring knowledge. So, oh my God, I can't take one more thing. My head is going to explode, right? You know, we say that. Right? I mean, sometimes you just... it feels like you're stuffing it in there. And the mind does work. I mean, that's one of the things that I do on my computer is I change the way I scroll it. Yeah. I do it every so many weeks because it makes me have to change my brain, that pattern.
Cool.
You know what I mean? Or I do things left-handed and then I try to do them right-handed and then back and forth. It's good because the mind just gets, or the brain gets so conditioned. But to trick it sometimes is a good thing as well. Yeah, it's just a little thing. It makes you mindful, too. So the knowledge of the physical body does not end with the knowledge of anatomy. In this body, there are these centers, he says again, and these are the organs of our intuition. Insofar as science recognizes them, they call them nervous centers or nerve centers. Excuse me. But what a mystic sees in them is the subtle power of perception. When we were traveling in Peru, I don't know if I told you this, we were with a group, and one of the people was profoundly deaf. And they didn't have anyone to translate for him. I'm a bit sensitive to that. I didn't want him to feel left out. I asked him, I sent him a text, because we could airdrop. We both had iPhones. Would you like me to take some notes? Especially if you're getting instructions, like you gotta have your luggage outside the door at, you know, 6:40, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning or whatever. And so we became close that way. But he was very, all of his other senses, of course, were extremely bright. And his profession had been as a investigator for the Federal Aeronautics and Airliner, the FAA. Very brilliant man. And we got to Machu Picchu. And it was like, we both felt it. You just touched. And everything was, you know, they talk about, well, we say it in Alhamdulillah, but they call it the, you know, the hum of the universe, the knot of our own. You could feel it in the stones. I mean, it was just, I don't know who it was I was standing in line with at dinner last night, but I said, did you feel that? And the person said, no. And I said, okay, it's just me. It's just like, this current just went right up this leg, you know, and I thought maybe there was a vibrator. I always check myself, you know, it's a little bit like the John Nash thing, you know. Do you see them there? You know, I have to ask people. Because you have those experiences. You don't want to just say, oh, something mystical is happening. You want to know if there's something else going on and check it. Okay. So, therefore, to a mystic, the human body is a more perfect instrument than the wireless receiver. Right? He says, for that is a dead thing compared to the human body. The body is a living wireless receiver if it is prepared for that purpose. Warner of coming dangers. The prayers, if you study the prayers, they're prophetic. We hear it all there. There's a story about one of, it was Murshid's cousin, Murshid Ali Khan. And someone had come to visit him. He was known to be a great healer. Someone had been in a bedridden for months with polio. And the family had asked, and I met her. She told me the story herself. And I said, no, it's true. It's not a hearsay. The family asked for him to come and offer some prayers. And he came, and he offered the prayers. And then he asked to be shown the washroom. And he asked the people of the home, would you please bring me a cloth? And he had taken that through his body, but he didn't hold on to it. They said, we saw from his mouth coming like a green slime. So he extracted that polio through his own body and then released it. Now, that's a powerful mystic that knows what they're doing with healing. So someone had come to visit him on another occasion, and this person had a flight they had to take. And he detained them. And they were being so respectful, as you would want to be with a merchant, or anyone, really, but especially a merchant that you ask for their time. You did say, you have to hurry. I've got an airplane to catch. They stayed, and they missed their airplane, and that airplane crashed and burned, and everybody died. He knew. So, you know, we don't learn these things for ourselves, but we learn them to be agents of great love and comfort to others, and peace, and witness. Sometimes we just have to witness for others. So Murshid goes on. We could do another practice, but I'm very conscious of my time. I know there's someone coming in right after me. I want to be respectful. So I'm just going to go on to the next section. Don't forget Kudus. Don't forget Towards the One. Use those today. See how they influence you. If something troublesome comes to mind, go to the element of breath that helps the mind. That breath is simply breathing in. We did it this morning with Murshid Alauddin, breathing in the mouth and out the mouth subtly. It can cleanse the mind. It's like dust, and you're blowing that into yourself and clearing away the congestion, which it really is. Okay, so you can use that breath. Now Murshid talks about the next area of knowledge is the breathing system. That it's critical that should be in good shape. If any of you have done Ayurvedic healing or with a Tibetan master that's a healer, you know they check your pulses. And they'll sometimes say the air element's out of balance. If the air element is out of balance, you know what happens to people? Anyone want to guess that does the practices? Gemma? Disease. Huh? Disease comes, but...
Yeah, congestion.
Mental?
You get kind of, you know,
you get track. Crap. Can get crazy.
Would you repeat that?
The air element's always connected with Eastern medicine, with the mind or the thinking apparatus. So when that becomes, sort of that line is clogged, there can be a confused thinking. Think about it. It's in a way very logical. Like when we cry, what happens? Right? Your nose gets often gets stopped up and starts to run, right? First it gets really stopped up. Then it starts to run. Think about it. It's like the air element gets blocked a little bit. The ablutions, I'm like, God, this is like Sufism 101 through 10,001 in 15 minutes. But the ablutions, that's why that's also important to keep our nostrils.
Doing the Lowadine's class too? You're doing a Lowadine's class and your class. Am I? Because he's doing Sufism.
I know, exactly. Well, I mean, these are all the things that have been of benefit, and they relate to these teachings. And I do find it's interesting, even when the presenters, I won't call us teachers, we're presenters, are giving something in their class, I go to another person's class, and it's like, my God, that's exactly what I do. I mean, we do sync up. Even if we're not attending each other's classes. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so the next aspect of the being is the breathing system, which in reality is not physical. Breath, as it is understood by science, is air that is which one inhales and its action on the lungs and the organs. But according to the mystic, the breath is a formation within us, and it's a magnetism. You know, it's like you see somebody and you're like, I don't know what's up with them, but I want to meet them. You ever feel that way? We might call it charisma, you know, or, you know, it's like when I met Coleman Barks, it was like, we were presenting at a conference together and I went and stood up next to him at the hotel desk and it's like, you don't know me. But I just want to stand next to you because I think you're a rock star. He's like, and I said to him, I want to thank you for all the work you've done in bringing Rumi to us. And he said, in that beautiful Southern Georgian accent, it wasn't work at all. It wasn't work at all. It was just service and love. Beautiful. But, you know, you feel that. You feel that charge, and you think, maybe a little spill over on me, too, right? You know what I mean? It's wonderful. But it's magnetism, too, and that's what makes... You think about the magnetism of Jalal ad-Din Rumi. How many years ago he left this earth, and how vital and alive his message is still. That's some magnetism, right? So... But according to the mystic, the breath is a formation within us. It's a magnetism. It's an ethereal aspect of our being, which is not only situated in the body, but which is all around the body. So we can charge the atmosphere with the breath. You know, that's one of the reasons when we sometimes begin the evening of Zikr, we're walking and breathing. Walking and breathing. We're bringing, you know, we're kind of charging the atmosphere for zikr, preparation. Just on the breath. Just on the breath. It is by the power of this breath that we are able to stand and walk on this ever-moving world. Gravity helps a little bit. The moment this energy, which is life, fails, we no longer stand on the ground. Even if the whole mechanism of our physical body is in perfect condition. I mean, we can't live very long without breath and air. Thus, there is a part of us living on the ethereal magnetism of breath. and it gives energy and radiance. Energy and radiance. I've said it before, being in India, I've met people that are breatharians, and they are translucent. It's almost as if you can see through them, and yet they're running these huge ashrams, you know, throngs of people coming to them. How does that work if it's not through? They're drawing the essence of what they need through the breath and transforming it and giving it out again. It's very beautiful to think about it, that the breath can do that. It's the best thing ever, really. It's the best medicine ever. So I'd like to go over, what time's this class over? No, I still have time, right?
Yes.
I have a half an hour. I can easily use that. I want to go into, this morning, Murshid Alauddin, we did, those of you that were there did the breath practice with him, and he talked about them in relationship, I think he did the elements. Didn't he talk about the elements? Mm-hmm. That same pattern is used in many different breath practices. So one is the healing breath. Murshid Sam was very fond of pairing the inhalation with Ya Shafi and the exhalation with Ya Kafi. That is very healing and it's very helpful. The elemental breath is another thing. First we learn the earth breath. All of this is the earth. And the water is the lymphatic system. We know in the lymphatic system where the blood is at all congested, it's a problem. The water element purifies that. The next is the fire element. We need the warmth in our body. We need energy. We need vitality. And it also helps to purify those parts of us that may be not yet refined. So if we have any aspect of us that's the passions are out of balance, like, I feel like I don't have enough, I need more, it could be greed, you know, oh, I think, look at how great I am, it could be pride, it could be, you know, so that balances those things, you know, or I don't have enough love, so there could be lust. So you can kind of get confused with passion, and there's a way to purify that too. The fire breath does that. And then the air breath is for the mind realm. It's also the realm of creativity, and it helps with that. If you feel congested in your thinking, it's a really good thing to do, you know, if you're stuck, that, or you, someone put an impression on you, then you can help clarify that with the air breath. And then there's the etheric breath. So I want to do those breaths with you in the way that Anayat Khan gave them, as purification breaths. And I want to go back to this phrase here, because he said, there is a part of us living on the ethereal magnetism of breath, which give energy and radiance. So Murshid gave this phrase. When you inhale the breaths, and I'll talk us through the pattern of the breaths, he describes that, first of all, he says to understand this practice is like a key to understanding all the esoteric practices that there are. When I was living in India and I was studying Tibetan Buddhism, and I mean, I still do, but I was there doing it, and I saw all these manuscripts, and I thought, my God, how could anyone possibly learn all there is about the Dharma, and then not only that, but all the various commentaries that these great beings have given on the Dharma. And I go from, you know, person to person when I have the opportunity to meet great beings. It's like, please tell me. How does one do that? I mean, I'm late starter. You maybe started when you were, you know, six, but, you know, how am I ever going to absorb this and really have it as a meaningful experience? I mean, it's not about knowledge, but it's about really understanding the Dharma in that way, having a perspective and making it, you know, being able to utilize it to help myself and perhaps help others. And they always would say, don't worry. Don't worry. If you have one practice and you do it with great devotion, it will unlock the mysteries. Just so touching to me, of everything. Everything will be revealed to you. Don't have to know everything. It is, and it will be there when you need it. I remember early on the path, I hadn't been on the path but a few years, and Pierre Vallat called, Maria, you know, it's time. It's time to step up. And it's like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not ready for that. And I talked to Marshita Vera. She said, no, but perhaps you aren't ready for it. But you know what? When you need it, you'll have the knowledge you need. Trust that. If Pierre Vallat's asking you, you must step forward. I trusted her. I remember that even now. You know, I don't know everything, but I can learn. And when I need to know, I will know. I don't need to grasp. It will be revealed. That's having faith. That's trusting in God's way. So this breath, Murshid says, is the key to all the teachings for us. Oh, okay, toward the one. That's one. Just breathe it in and out. Don't even need to know the whole prayer. And then these breaths. Now, these breaths are on our website. You can search the website if you need to know how to get to that. You can talk to Gemma. You can talk to Noor Salimi. You can talk to Halima. You can talk to Raheem. There's a lot of people that can get you there. You can talk to me.
And our practice manual.
Yeah, we have practice manuals on the table with Jhamsa Sokpa. And that practice is listed there. And this is the one Murshid gave. He gave other ones to the healing order. Those were very specific in teaching you how to guide your breath to certain parts of the body. That's a whole other thing. This is the one we all do every day. Or I do every day. I try to do every day. Presuming others are joining me in it. And it is, he gives us the instruction to take the breath in slightly fuller than the natural breath, but without, be using the ego. Just make sure it's a full breath, both in the inhalation and exhalation. And this is the phrase he gives us. And you say it inwardly to yourself as you breathe. I inhale divine life and light. Okay, that's energy and radiance, which was just in this teaching. The last line. So we bring in light and life. First it's light and life breathing in. So the very subtle. And then we generate it within and we turn it out again. It's like a water wheel. You can think of it that way. It's Tonglen too. Those of you that know the practice of Tonglen. So we're bringing in and we're sending out again. So then we breathe in, let me say it, light and life. Then that phrase turns, it flips, and it goes, life and light. You all know it, you can keep me on track. And for those that always say, oh, why is she always just teaching the breaths again? Well, we need to learn it better, more. So this will be it on breath this time, this camp. So let me say it again. I inhale divine light and life. And when we breathe out, we concentrate silently on I radiate divine life and light. So there's that turning of, it's like a sort of a, it's to restart the pattern. And there's a subtle reason for it. If you study and meditate on why did Mersha turn the phrase that way, it starts to reveal other things. So I'm just going to say that much. Okay?
I always think that we begin with the light and we end with the light.
Yeah, it seals it in light. Yeah, that's good. Good. So let's first begin with three exhalations. So we're going to take the deep breath in. And we're going to breathe out through the mouth. And bend at the waist a little bit. Rashida Vera used to say, cough. Get it all out. Now breathe in again. And breathe out through the mouth. Kind of bend forward, get it all. It all out. All that congested air. Now breathe in again. And we'll breathe out one more time. Just push it all out. Now, when you breathe in, think of that full breath. Think about, you know, these amazing things that we have that are called lungs. But on the ethereal realm, they become your wings. So you're spreading your wings really wide as you breathe in. And when you breathe out, you're flapping your wings and you're giving a blessing. Okay? So you're breathing it in and you're breathing it out. So we begin, and the breath, the first breath, is in through the nose and out through the nose. And I'll say the phrase for us a few times for those of us that need it. And usually the breath is done 5 times for each one of these. So we breathe in. I inhale divine light and life. And breathe out through the nose. I radiate divine life and light. In through the nose. I inhale divine light and life. And you breathe out through the nose. I radiate divine life and light. And continue a few more times silently. The next breath is breathing in through the nose and out through the mouth. In through the nose and out through the mouth. And the phrase again is, I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine life and light. In through the nose, I inhale divine light and life. And out through the mouth, I radiate divine life and light, and continue for a few more breaths. And the third breath is breathing in through the mouth and out through the nose. In through the mouth and out through the nose. And again, the phrase goes, I inhale divine life and, divine light and life. I radiate divine life and light. So as you're breathing in, think of all this light of all of the stars, universe upon universe, coming into your being, filling you with light and life. And as you breathe out through the nose, you're offering it back again. This exchange of light and life, life and light. And Murshid adds in the instructions that for your very advanced students, you can also give them the concentration of love while doing this practice. So you can feel love and radiate love as well. Continue a few more times in through the nose and out through the mouth. In through the mouth and out through the nose. The next breath is in through the nose and out. No, in through the mouth and out through the mouth. In through the breathing, in through the mouth and out through the mouth. And like Murshida Laudine said, Murshida Vera would teach us, like we're sipping. Oh, it's like the nectar of the universe, breathing in this light and life. And it's like a whisper, we're giving it back again. Life and light. And the last breath, which is not always given, but only to advanced students, which of course you all are, is breathing in through the nose and out through the nose while saying the prayer Nayaz on each phrase. So I'll say the prayer for you, and you can breathe in, okay, and out. So breathe in while hearing these words. Beloved Lord, Almighty God, and breathe out through the rays of the sun. And breathe in through the waves of the air. And breathe out through the all-pervading life and space. And breathe in. Purify and revivify me. Hold your breath. And I pray. Breathe out. Heal my body, heart, and soul. That's given three times. So again, breathe in. Beloved Lord, Almighty God. And breathe out through the rays of the sun, in through the waves of the air, out, this is in and out the nose, but the all-pervading life and space, out, in, purify and revivify me, hold, and I pray, breathe out, heal my body, heart, and soul. One more time, breathing in. Beloved Lord, Almighty God, breathe out through the rays of the sun. Breathe in through the waves of the air. Breathe out through the all-pervading life and space. Breathe in. Purify and revivify me. Hold. And I pray. Breathe out. Heal my body, heart, and soul. That prayer contains all the elements. It contains all the elements. Think about it. The rays of the sun, the waves of the air, the all-pervading life and space. It's all there. Yes, Raheem?
Years ago, I thought do we not also use color concentration when we do that?
We do that when we're doing the elemental breath.
But it seems like it's...
They're used for different purposes. It's a similar technology used for different purposes. Yeah, that's a whole other subject. So may I ask, does anyone have any questions or comments? Or yes, David? Oh, you're just saying this. No. Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you. I have a question.
Yes.
What is So I guess maybe this is either too specific or too general. What is the goal of the purification breaths?
Oh, well, again, it's as if, you know, do you, I don't, because I'm still very European, but do you bathe every day?
Yeah.
Okay. Why wouldn't you clean the inside tubes as much as the outside stuff? Does that make sense?
Yeah, like neti pot,
yeah. It's for purification.
It's for purification. And it's for, you know, it's just for clarifying. I always think of it when I'm doing it myself, it feels like an internal yoga. Mm-hmm. So it's like stretching those tubes and those veins and, you know, and...
It feels very subtle. Mm-hmm. Or is it not subtle?
No, I think it is. I think that's why Murshid said to study the... To do this practice every day is essential to understanding all the esoteric teachings. I think there's layers that... as we clarify and as we do the practice, we learn more and more. I think both about ourselves and the universe.
When Murshid Alauddin teaches the purification breath, and we get to the ether breath, he says, now do this one very refined and subtle. So
It's the kind of breath that you would fall into after long periods of meditation. It's almost like you, wait, am I? I mean, the mind then kicks in for a minute and says, "Am I breathing at all?" You know, I mean, it can happen. It's like maybe you don't even start. It becomes so subtle you don't feel your body. It's not like you're having an out of body, but you become very etheric. And you know, how do you think people? Some people bilocate or pass through walls. I mean, that's not mythical stuff. People really do that because they've learned to sort of arrange the molecules to lesser or more dense formations. Yes, Ravi?
You know, when you inhale, there's a cool aspect. When you exhale, there's
warm.
A warm aspect.
Yeah.
Does he talk about that?
I haven't found anything in the teachings that I recall, maybe others do, about the warmth. But, you know, as long as we have that warmth, it's so helpful because it means we're alive. You know, and if you've been, and I think you're in the healing professions and likely have been with someone as they've passed, and you clearly see the dissolution of those elements. You know, first what happens, the body really stops moving too much, you know, it gets more in state, and then usually the kidneys stop working, so there's not the fluids coming through the body, and then the body starts growing a little cold to touch. So the fire element dissolves, and pretty soon the breath gets shallow, and then it just stops. And then the etheric realm is there for a while.
Did you read Shams Norton's experience when Kabir Kids passed and what he witnessed? His body, the elements just dissolving. It was amazing.
You can see it. It's very, I'm sure.
That was a repost by Norton. It was Nurrahman.
Nurrahman. I read Nurrahman's. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, it was so beautiful.
Yeah. Well, and it was also very. And I want you to speak, please. But back to your point. I also thought it was very beautiful. I think Nurrahman put in there also the talking to the person and letting them know that it's okay, their work's done, and it's okay to move on. Some people wait for a loved one to come from afar. Maybe they need to be reassured that things are complete and it's okay.
Part of his profession too.
Yeah, and it's very beautiful to offer that to someone. Gemma?
Well, it's kind of like doing a personal testimony, I think.
That's okay. We'll take it.
We don't do testimonials, but it sort of feels like a testimonial. But when I first learned the purification breaths, in this way and took them on as a daily practice, I would say at that stage of my life, I was prone I have seasonal affective disorder for one thing, and I was prone to negative thoughts. Mm-hmm. And I didn't think about it much. It's just who I am, right? And I started doing that practice, and for me, what I noticed, and I would do it because visuals help me as well, so I would do it in the morning before the rising sun and really feel myself inhaling that light and life and radiating back what I was receiving in that. And I've been doing, I don't know how many years I've been doing that now, but it has been the most precious, treasured practice for me because it's changed my life. And I feel different inside. I feel like a different person inside. And I can recognize when I forget to, or fail to give myself that time to do it. I immediately can see what's happening within me if I don't do it. And it just calls me to do it again. And that radiate, that word is so important to me because that particular word is the very thing that I also think was so significant that Mersha gave us. To radiate, not just to breathe it out, but to radiate that forth from one's whole being and to feel that. And so, and I, of course, I always feel Murshid and Murshido with me when I'm doing it in all the beings. And then we say the prayer, the Nyas, and we're not just saying it for ourselves. We really are saying it for all beings. And so it's been, like I said, it's just a jewel of a practice. And
it's interesting because I've always perceived you as a precious gift to us.
Well, and I've heard people say to Gemma frequently since she's taken up that practice, it's been some years now, about her you're radiant, you know, that she is, and also you have told me you don't get ill as frequently, that it really has served, you know, it's a good hygiene inwardly, you know.
Yeah, I used to have bronchial stuff happening all the time. So
clean the tubes out.
Cleansing. Yeah.
And I'm glad you said that about before the sun, because Mersha does say it's good to do it before standing, if you can. We did it this morning standing, and before with fresh air and the sun, you know. So you feel that radiance and it comes in.
What did you just say? Can you repeat that?
Yes. Murshid said that he gave the instructions that it's good to do it in the morning with some fresh air. Doesn't have to be outside, but with some fresh air and with the sun, you know, the concentration with the sun. You don't have to look at the sun, but that's another practice that you can do, not staring at the sun, but there's a practice that Sufis do with the light of the sun. So that is an aspect. But, you know, if you don't have that, then you can just imagine it. And Merchant also says, in the case of someone being ill, they can certainly do it lying down instead of standing. And you can also do it many times throughout the day, that it's beneficial for one's health if they're ill to do it many times. It's clarifying and healing, supports the system.
I don't know if it was Mersha had diet, you might know, but I've been told that, you know, if you only have one practice you can do, you know, an icon, this is it.
Yeah.
I think it was Mersha.
I don't know. But I do know this. I have had the good fortune, and I've very, very slowly been working through it. There was it was called a synopsis, an instructional guide for caliphs, sheikhs, and murshids. So it's a way to teach everyone in the manner that an icon would. And I have this. It's only like 27 pages, And I think I'm up to like page 9 and I have like almost hundreds of pages. So it was just the synopsis he gave. This is the practice. This is why we do the practice. And here's the reference in many volumes, some of which are published, some that aren't. But, you know, unfortunately, Mirshad Hidayat was very generous. I have everything digitally for all of the esoteric papers and then some. So I've been trying to recompose that because I think it's essential. Because that's the way, you know, at least through that lineage, how he would have taught. And what we also know is that he traveled so much. You know, there was, I think I've mentioned this several times, that I found it astounding when I was doing some healing retreat with Davy Tide. Some of you know her. She's an old-time friend, and so I try to do things sometimes with her. And she had given us this practice, and she had drawn this character in blue. And she said, now, Mirshad gave this practice to visualize this character sort of marching towards the person that needs healing. Well, the character was the letter Hung in, some people say Hung, but it's Hung, in Tibetan, which is the seal of the heart. And I said, now how is that? He studied. Remember, he wandered. He had some deaths in the family, and he wandered for many years in the Himalayan mountains. And if you read his story, he met with many, they said, many holy men of different traditions. And, you know, then he come, then this message of spiritual liberty, because he's solving for himself. It's all one. People are calling it different things and doing different things and wearing different things and saying different things, but he saw the unity of it. You know, that was his realization. So, yeah, it's. I think that's a precious document we have, and it's rare. It just kind of got unearthed, and I have. Luckily, it came into my hands, so I'm gonna. I do have a commitment. I feel like maybe that would be my. You know, when we went down the zip line, I told Joe. I said, "Do you even have a little bit of a rapid heartbeat?" He said, "No." I said, "What a way to go, Joe!" So we did the zip line at Niagara Falls. Some of you saw it on Facebook. We just felt so relaxed. You know, we both just reached out and looked at each other. It's like, what a way to go, you know. But if there is any legacy, maybe that would be it, to reconstruct that of Mirshad's teachings for others to have.
I felt that when you were talking.
Did you? Well, all right.
And boom, boom.
Or you could just transmit it.
It's so beautiful that he, you know, left that for us. That, and it was in the last few years of his life that he transmitted that. He knew that it was like a shorthand where someone was taking, this is the practice, and this is where it's referred to in the various teachings. And then he gave it. And that, this practice that I just gave you is one of the primary ones that he insisted on, or not insisted, encouraged it. So, yeah.
You know how I just encouraged you with those words? You know, there are things in my life that I need to be about. Mm-hmm. And there are things in my life that just like, just don't want me to get to it.
Yeah.
Or something will swing in, right? And like they read your intention as you were walking across the room. And they go to intercept you.
Oh, hey. Oh yeah, right.
And it's kind of like
distractions.
Yeah, I already have flight instructions. I have my assignment, and it's really tough sometimes. You know, to like
stay focused.
No, I can stay focused. It's tough dealing with
the other stuff.
Them feeling like rejected or hurt, or like you don't care about me, or you don't give me enough attention. It's kind of like it's like. Being an aircraft, a plane going across the sky from one city to another, but somebody on the way to that city stops the plane and says, hey, and the plane drops from the sky. I feel like that. I can't stop. I'll drop from the sky.
You know what? And it will become more and more increasing the closer you get to what your real purpose is. Yeah. It will get, and so you have to just get more focused. And that, you know, also requires these skillful means that people. First of all, you have to be clear. Don't waste my freaking time. If you really want to know, I'll tell you, but then you need to use it. And if this is just for... I've said this many times, in my retirement as an educator, I think that people think I'm open for their entertainment, and it's not true. It's like, oh, well, now we can just use her app. It's like, no, I'm very, I've even said it to a few people here, I've gotten more inner and more quiet because I can. It's not my nature to do this. I like sitting alone and being quiet and being alone. But I do it because, you know, I've been called to do it and I've been told that I should do it, so I do it. But there's other work to be done, you know, and I believe that prayer is essential, an essential contribution to the world, and what we do in our own practice benefits others, not just us. And so I find that as I can, I dedicate more and more time to that and thoughtfulness. And I find a way to let people know without really insulting them that this is, I have these times available, you know. I try not to overbook because it can happen. And the universe, in a way, I think, is testing us. You know, sometimes they say the path of least resistance is the best. But what I've really learned, and I've learned it the hard way, is sometimes when you're on a path, there'll be many, many things to distract you from it. And sometimes obstacles arise. And what that does is it's like, you know, weightlifting. You know, it makes you stronger, actually. It can make you more determined and more focused.
I like to be focused. It feels good.
Toward the one.
Exactly.
Towards the one. Oh, towards the one. Is it time? Thank you, sweetheart. God bless all of you.